Small business, big advice. Welcome to the Very Good Marketing Podcast, where small business owners, employees, or just marketing fanatics can learn how to grow a business on a budget without wasting any money.
Welcome to the Very Good Marketing Podcast. My name is Shannon and I am here with small business marketing consultant and expert Amy Miosevic. And today we are continuing the journey into small business marketing by talking about the Very Good Marketing Framework, what it is, how it's unique, and how you can apply it. So Amy, why don't you get started by telling us, why did you create this framework and when did you discover it?
So about six or seven years ago, I started, working in a marketing consulting capacity. And what I found was a very loose kind of guidelines around what marketing methods to use for what business at what time, what their purpose was. As a consultant, I guess, I was kind of providing specific advice to clients on their business and how they could actually implement a certain marketing technique. But what was missing was this map for them where they could actively see why they were using a certain marketing technique at what point on their customer's journey and to what effect. Mm-hmm. So I needed kind of something to hang a lot of this advice on so that it was really contextual, so that a business could actively take the advice with them and keep using it in their business after I was gone. And as a consultant, I guess that's the purpose of your role is to help someone on their journey, but to leave something there that they can keep using so that your impact in their business, I guess, keeps going, you know, forever. And there wasn't really anything out there that was high level enough that anyone could look at it and understand it really simply, that covered all of the different marketing techniques and methods, that was, visual as well. That's something I was looking for. I wanted something that could be recalled easily, mm-hmm. and visual diagrams and visual instruments are really, really easy to recall for a lot of people. So I wanted to make sure there was something like that out there. And even though I found lots and lots of, little bits and pieces that could be used, I hadn't found anything that was really holistic. So that's kind of where the journey started. And what we started doing was going, okay, well, there's social media. Where is someone using social media on their journey to becoming a customer? Are they using it right at the start? Are they using it when they're already a customer and a fan of your organization? How does it fit in? Or if you had a website, I guess a website kind of sits in the middle of this customer journey. No one's going to find your website, you know, out of nowhere. They've either been told about it, they've gone through, you know, word of mouth, or they've done a Google search and they've used SEO, or they've seen an ad and they've clicked on it, or they've, you know, seen a magazine advertisement. Like, a website is always the second part of any customer journey, or the third part sometimes. It's never really at the very beginning. So when we were doing website work for clients, we would always say, you know, well, we'll build the website for you, but how are your customers actively going to find it? And a lot of them were thinking, well, you know, I don't know, they'll just find it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really had to kind of spend a lot of time trying to fit all these pieces together so I could bring out a model and say, here's your website. This is where it fits. This is how customers are going to find it. And this is what we need to do after they visit your website. So that's where the model came from. And we call it the caterpillar framework, because it looks like a caterpillar. It's a visual representation of a linear customer journey. Mm-hmm. So what that means is a customer, they always start as a complete stranger. They don't know anything about your business, and they go through a series of touch points on their journey to becoming your biggest fan. And every single touch point along that journey, I think we mentioned it in our last episode, they've got the opportunity to continue on that journey to being a fan, or they have the option to leave. And the marketing methods that exist at each touch point, the strength of those is going to impact whether someone continues or whether they leave.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we started. And we have five touch points now that we talk about quite a lot in the Very Good Marketing Framework, but there was so many more when we first started. There was, 10, depending what business, you know, you had, there were lots of different kinds of touch points, and it's actually taken us quite a number of years to boil it down to a model that you could apply to practically any business in any industry.
So what are the touch points that you've settled on?
So at the start, what we've got is a stranger. and someone has to become a visitor next. Mm-hmm. So the marketing methods that fall under that are turning a stranger to a visitor are things like SEO. It's a great example. We talked about that quite a bit in the last episode. Then what you've got is a visitor who needs to become a lead. So you've got a website that sits kind of in that capacity, maybe a social media page. Then you've got a customer after a lead. And that terminology is not uncommon. I think a lot of people talk about leads and customers. Mm-hmm. And from a customer, you've got someone that becomes a fan. And then the next opportunity you have is turn that fan into jam. And it sounds like an odd concept, but the reason that we talk about it quite a lot is because you have the opportunity to turn your lifetime customers into new customers for your business, either through repurchases, through referrals, through leaving reviews. And a lot of people neglect that really last, like that end touch point. A lot of marketing often just focuses on generating leads for your business. But marketing is actually prevalent in every single touch point across the customer journey, and you need to be able to make the most of every touch point you have so that you're not wasting any money you're spending at the start. You can really bring someone all the way down from a stranger to a visitor to a lead to a customer and then to a fan. And if you can bring someone all the way to the end, they're just worth so much. Yeah. In fact, when we talk about lifetime customers or fans, you know, they're worth like 5-10 times what a normal customer is worth. Because mm-hmm. they're the ones that tell everyone about you. They're the ones that are loyal to your business. They keep
returning.
Coming back. Exactly. Yeah. They're so valuable. And it's crazy that so many marketing frameworks and disciplines or agencies, they just stop talking about that group. They just stop talking. Once they've delivered a lead, that's their job done, which is crazy. So that's a pretty big mindset shift, I think, when it comes to using this framework versus using a lot of other frameworks or having other consultants come and talk to you about your business.
Yeah. But at a higher level, what are sort of the fundamental elements of this framework? Like what does this framework mean at its core?
So there's, I think mindset shifts is the main part of this conversation. So many people will go into the journey of implementing this and not have the success unless they can implement, we call them the five C's. There's commitment is probably one of the biggest ones. So a lot of people, and we talked a little bit about it in our last episode, a lot of people don't have a time commitment or a commitment to executing a marketing process through or a marketing strategy. So there's so many companies I've met that have like a static marketing plan that they may have had to produce for, I guess, an annual planning project or something. And they've got, you know, target markets and they've got their four P's or their six mm-hmm. P's or whatever it is. And they have all this stuff written down, their unique advantage, but it's not a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is they have a document and they leave it and they never look at it again.
Yeah.
And committing to, I guess, what this strategy looks like and how you can implement it and actually putting aside time every single day or every week to edging yourself a little bit further ahead towards your goals through marketing is like a really huge thing that you're not going to you're not going to be able to achieve your goals and you're not going to be able to implement this kind of framework and this methodology unless you really have commitment to it. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't understand. It's such a huge commitment and a mindset shift for businesses. I think without that, you're not going to be able to see the results. And that kind of, that's the same in almost anything. Unless you commit to your goals and you commit to what you're doing, you're not really going to be able to see or realize the full potential of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
So
if commitment is one of the five C's,
yes.
What are the other four?
Clarity is my other really big one. So are you clear on what your business offers? Are you clear on who your target market is? Are you clear about the goals you want to achieve? Mm-hmm. Unless everyone in your organization, whether that's just you, whether there's five of you, whether 10 of you, whether there's 100 of you, unless you're really clear on what you've set out to achieve, it's going to be really hard to all get on the same page and achieve it. There was an article in the Harvard Business Review that talked about how only 5% of larger organizations, only 5% of the employees actively understand what the goals of the business are, what the strategy is. It's something where if everyone was on the same page and they had clarity around what their job was and what the purpose of mm-hmm. their role is, then everyone's going to be able to kind of row in the same direction.
Yeah.
And a lot of organizations have people that are involved in the entire marketing and sales process. So one of the touch points we talked about earlier was customers, and the next one was fans. And to be able to take someone from being a customer through to being a fan, it's the quality of your product delivery. A lot of staff are part of the product delivery process and don't realize.
I have the example of the of your follow-up for the skirting board company.
Yes. So if your staff don't really understand the impact of every conversation they have or every interaction they have with a customer, then it's going to be really hard for them to help your organization reach those goals. So having clarity around their purpose, their role, the goals that you're trying to achieve, that's pretty important. The other C, so the third C that I've got on here, it's actually quite easy to fit these into a bit of alliteration, but consistency is the next one. So consistently delivering pretty much every marketing technique you can think of, consistency is such a big thing. And I know we mentioned in our last episode those social media pages that haven't been touched in 6 months, those SEO campaigns that haven't been reviewed, or the website that's outdated, and you know, things like that. I think it's quite obvious when you're browsing yourself as a consumer which companies have dropped off and not got that consistency behind their marketing. If you think about any kind of metaphor that has to do with climbing a mountain or compounding interest or whatever it is, it's the consistency that's really going to make a difference. Even if it's just a really small thing that you can do with your time every single week, that consistency is going to make a huge difference. So consistency is a huge one. The fourth one's communication. Mm-hmm. Again, huge. If you're working with third party, like agencies or contractors, graphic designers, whatever it is, having effective communication between you and other stakeholders is in peril. Like if you have goals that you want to reach, if you have a strategy that you want to communicate, make sure that you're doing it all the time, because the more everyone's on the same page, the better the outcomes are going to be. So if you want to achieve, if you want 100 leads next month, make sure that everyone knows that you want 100 leads next month. Communicate that with everyone you can. And the more you can share ideas, the more you can share knowledge, the better every outcome's going to be. I mean, knowledge sharing is such a massive part of the success of small business. You'd be surprised how much knowledge people within the company have that you don't have yourself, because you might be in a different role. Mm-hmm. You might not be having communication with customers all the time. So that's a pretty big one. And the last one is constant improvement. Had to weasel that one into a C, but constant improvement is this framework that we're going to kind of dive into a bit more today. This isn't a static framework like a marketing plan. It's not always, you're not always going to get the same results every month. It's not something you can set and forget. The reason is because marketing changes all the time and consumer behavior changes all the time. If you are finding you're hitting a conversion rate that you're really proud of, if your website's converting at 5% or 10% and you're really, really excited about that, it's probably not going to be the case in 12 months' time.
Yeah.
So putting this hat on, this constant improvement hat, and making sure that you appreciate that nothing's forever when it comes to marketing. You're always going to have to tweak things. You're always going to have to look at numbers and understand trends and patterns. It's the flux of it that you have to kind of appreciate. And it's hard work. But if you've got everything else in place, if you've got clarity about what you want to achieve, if you're consistent with your time allocation, you're committed to the outcome, you're communicating with everyone, then you'll find the constant improvement thing isn't such a burden anymore.
Yeah.
So that's it. They're the five C's.
They're the five C's. So in terms of that linear customer journey that we've touched on, what are some of the bottlenecks and issues that can sort of come up within that journey?
So because it's linear and it's a linear system, there's always going to be points where it breaks down. Always. I mean, especially for small, medium-sized businesses, like I said, it's constantly changing. So there's always going to be something there that's not performing at the level you need it to perform at. Otherwise, you'd be hitting your goals all the time.
Yep.
So when you're looking at this linear model, not everyone is going to make it from a stranger through to being a fan. Like, it's ridiculous. But those conversion rates between each of those touch points will vary based on, I guess, what touch point it is, what business you have, what industry you're in, what marketing methods you're using. I'll give you an example. So if you were a landscaping company, a really, really simple example. You've got a website sitting here, and that's where visitors are kind of going. But to get them there, you've decided you're going to invest in Google Ads. And Google Ads have their own conversion metrics. So if you're creating a Google Ads campaign, you'd be looking at a conversion metric for how many people click on your ads. And yeah. that's their click-through rate. And that conversion metric might only be 2%. Mm-hmm. But if you were running a social media ads campaign, you might be looking for something higher. You might be looking for a 3% conversion rate. If you had SEO, you might be looking for a click-through rate of 4%. I guess it just depends on what mechanism you're using. Mm-hmm. So for this organization, they're running a Google Ads campaign. They've got 2% of people clicking through their website, and their website has a certain number of visitors that visit it each month, and they want a certain number of those people to actually pick up the phone and call. So what's the conversion rate that you'd be looking for on that website? And again, industries are different. How you measure the conversion rate could be different. So say this company's website's performing again at 2%. Mm-hmm. What you need to do with that is look at that and figure out whether it's better or worse than it was the previous month, whether it's kind of in line with your industry, whether that's actively your bottleneck. I mean, 2%, I think that's pretty low. Mm-hmm. Possibly then your opportunity is to maybe make some improvements on your website.
Yeah.
Then what happens is you've got a certain number of those people calling through, and they're picking, you're picking up the phone in the office, and maybe the person at the front desk is, they're all right. Maybe they've had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've had a great day, maybe they're great at their job. You've got a certain number of those leads coming in that you're actively converting into customers. Are you measuring it? Are you recording all that? What's the conversion rate? Is it 40%? Is it 50%? Is it way lower? I mean, if you had a 10% conversion rate from turning leads into customers, if you double that to just 20%, that can completely change your income every month. Like, that's insane. Like, it's doubling it. Like, it's just crazy to think that how working on those conversion metrics and actively looking at this whole system can completely change your business.
And really breaking it down into each phase of the framework and looking at what can be improved every step of the way.
Definitely. It's such an interesting concept because so many businesses think that more customers mean more strangers. But if this landscaper came to me and said, look, I've only got a 10% conversion rate, then I go, well, that's probably your bottleneck there. Because 10% isn't a lot. I mean, how many quotes do you think these people are getting? Maybe something seriously wrong. If they've taken the time to find you mm-hmm. and they've taken the effort to call and leave an inquiry, they're probably wanting to purchase from you. I'm imagining they're not going to be, every single one's going to be shopping around. There's a reason they're not converting higher.
Mm-hmm.
A service-based business should be expecting at least a 30% conversion. And then from there, you know, with landscaping, it could be a bit different. It's a service-based organization, and as an owner, you might not be directly involved in the delivery anymore. So once they're a customer, how are you actually delivering that product, and is it of a level that's going to mean that they turn into a fan? It's hard to know who has become a fan. Have you ever heard of Net Promoter Score surveys?
Yes. Yeah.
So if you were to give a survey to a customer after you've delivered a product or service and they give you a 9 or a 10 out of 10, then mm-hmm. you can assume that they're a fan, right? So if you're delivering a service like a landscaping service, then you need to spend the time working out how you can get that 9 and 10 every single time. And it's really hard when you're relying on contractors and staff members to deliver your products and services mm-hmm. for you. But if someone came to me and said, only 10% of my customers are leaving me a 9 or a 10 out of 10, then maybe there's your problem.
Yeah.
Landscaping is something that's ongoing sometimes. You don't want to be losing those customers. Imagine if you had a churn rate of 10% every month. You'd spend a fortune bringing all those people back through, but maybe nothing actually improving your service.
Yeah.
So that system can be really broken down and looked at, and conversion metrics from getting someone from one touch point to the next are the key to identifying where the bottlenecks are and the key to identifying exactly where you should spend your marketing budget.
Yeah.
So imagine if you had, and last time we did talk about this briefly, a 3-4% of your revenue was dedicated to marketing each month. Imagine if you spent it just fixing one of those bottlenecks.
Yeah.
So for the landscaper, they might have looked at the system and gone, I think my bottleneck is in our product delivery space. Maybe they're losing more customers than they're bringing on. Maybe they're not getting good feedback. So they go, okay, well, I'm going to invest this budget into training my team.
Yeah.
Or maybe they implement something like a surprise and delight. So maybe they they do a bit of extra work every single time for free. Something like really special that just gets someone kind of over the line.
Top tier, like customer service more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, there was a really cool story. I think it was Zappos, the story. You know the Zappos? It's like a...
The lollies?
No, the online... it's like an online retailer, I think, in America. And they have a customer service and support team on the phone. And they have some wow... It's like a wow initiative. And it's a budget that each team member is given to really wow customers and do something crazy. So if they're on the phone and something's been stuffed up with their order, they have an allocated budget to be able to send them a whole brand new something to really surprise them. And a lot of organizations do that. I think there's a company that has a dedicated wow team member that can go around and just make someone's day. The other day at an event, I met an owner of a restaurant here in Perth, and he said that all of his team members at the restaurant get a budget each month to wow a customer. So if they overhear someone saying, I can't choose between these two meals, then they've got the budget to be able to bring out the second meal and surprise them.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. There's so much really amazing stuff you can do in the product delivery space. And if you're actively recording your Net Promoter Score feedback, then you can see whether those things are having an impact. But so many organizations just don't do it. It's really hard to implement. It's hard to implement. It's hard to get the feedback sometimes. You have to push for the feedback a lot of times. If you've not got a high volume business, you might not get all the feedback that you need, because more people are likely to leave negative feedback than positive feedback.
I think, like you said last episode, the budget allocation as well, you know, it might be quite daunting for some businesses to think like, oh, well, now I have to spend all this money on doing this, that, and the other. Whereas, like you said last time, if you just break it down to a percentage each month, then you're not going to feel the pinch as much as if you all of a sudden decide to spend thousands and thousands of dollars of your budget on one thing in a burst of energy, and then you drop it again for the rest of the year.
And that's the commitment piece. It's often the case that you don't have to completely reinvent the wheel to make change. If you were looking at your conversion rate from leads to customers, you made a 5% increase. That could be the way someone answers the phone. It could be evaluating your pricing structure or the way you quote on stuff. Like, it might not be an expensive change, but it could actively make quite a difference.
Big difference. Yeah.
And the other thing that I have to mention is if you're not delivering things, and I'd love to talk about this more, if you're not delivering things the same way every time, then you can't improve it. You can't improve something that doesn't exist, right? So a really, really important thing that I challenge everyone to do after listening to this episode is actively figure out what their customer journey is and how they deliver it. So is it the same? Is someone answering the phone the same way every time? Are they delivering the products the same way every time? How can you start this mindset shift where you've got complete clarity on what it is that you're doing for your customers? And then, at least if you've written it down, sometimes the act of just delivering something the same way every time can lead to success.
It comes back to that consistency that we talked about.
Yeah, definitely. If you are, if you listen to the best phone call that someone has with a customer throughout the day, and you write down everything they said, and then the second time they answer the phone, if you encourage them to use the same kind of prompts, then even just something like that is going to make a difference. And I'll tell you a little bit about consistency. There's a really great analogy. There are so many. There's a really great one about a guy that walks into a barbershop. And he walks into this barbershop, and when he gets there, there's a lady waiting for him. She asks him if he'd like a seat and if he'd like a beer. She gave him a beer and asked if he'd like to watch anything on TV while he was waiting for the barber. And he said, I'd love to watch the game. And so she put the TV on and they had a bit of a chat. And then when the barber was ready, he sat down. He was chatting to the barber, had a great time, and had the best haircut of his life. He was pretty happy. And then a month later, he goes back to the same barber, and the lady greets him at the door, but she doesn't ask him if he wants a beer. She doesn't ask him if he wants the TV on. So that's okay. It's all good. She was busy. So he had a seat, he waited, and then the barber came up. He had a good chat to the barber, still had a great haircut, like arguably best haircut of his life again. So he was pretty happy. The third time he went back to the barber a few months later, there wasn't anyone there to greet him. The barber was kind of off in the corner. He was cutting someone else's hair, so the guy just waited awkwardly in the doorway, didn't really know what to do. The barber eventually came over, asked him to have a seat, didn't really say much, it was a bit awkward, but still cut his hair fantastically. Now, the next time this guy needed a haircut, he didn't go back to that barber. Mm-hmm. Not because the haircut wasn't really, really good, because it was a really great haircut, but because the actual service that he received was not consistent. In fact, if he got the service the first time that he ended up getting the last time, the great haircut, he probably wouldn't have minded. Like, it wouldn't have been a big thing. But once you deliver something one way and then remove it, even if it's not something you're
comparison.
Paying for,
You've created a comparison within your own
So now
business.
He thinks it's not valuable anymore because he's not getting all the stuff. So if you are dealing with customers in a service capacity and you're talking to them differently every single time, then they're going to notice those differences.
Yeah.
You don't have to be delivering something at a 10 every time. If you deliver something at a 5 consistently, that's enough for someone to go, I know what I'm going to get when I call. Yeah. I know what I'm going to get if I have a question. It's enough. You don't have to surprise and delight every single time. Mm-hmm. It's just being consistent with the way that you deliver your products and services that's actually going to make someone go from being a customer to being a really big fan. And I think that's a really important thing to remember when setting out to map your customer journey. Paying attention to the way that you do it every single time and recording it and delivering it the same way, I promise it's going to make a pretty big difference.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I think we've kind of covered the basics of the framework and even gone to that higher level. And I think we can continue on talking about more in depth of each stage next time.
Sounds great. Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you.